All right. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, and we're here for a bonus Q&A call for the Insulin Resistance Solution Practitioner Training. And I'm here just to answer whatever questions you might have so far. If this is your first time getting on a call live, then we'd love to hear a little introduction from you. So the way we're going to work the call is for you to raise your hand if you have a question or just want to introduce yourself or make some comments, and you can do that by pressing 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're on the teleconference only, where you're online only, then you can just go ahead and type your question into the chat box that shows up to the right of the big blue screen. We are, as we said last time, working on a new conference line, and it's proving to be much better, much superior, but we're still in transition from working with some of the old stuff, so we'll be duplicating our efforts. Now I'm looking back for my, there we go. No? There we are. Okay, good. So it looks like Michaeline and Beatrice are on, and I'm going to go ahead and I just put down hands because I would ask for a show of hands for people who could hear me. And if you have a question now, go ahead and press 1 on your keypad, and I will be happy to answer whatever questions you have. So go ahead. And Beatrice, you weren't on last time, so it would be great for you to introduce yourself as well. And the way we did introductions last time was to say your name, where you're from, and what kind of a practitioner you are, how long you've been in practice, and what your goals are for taking this course. So let's get started. I'm moving the screens around so I can see both screens at the same time and monitor questions. So here we go. Oops, that's not the one. Sorry, I'm still confused by all these extra screens. There we go, video conference. Okay, looks like Beatrice is also on the video conference part as well. So, who's got a question? Both of you have questions. So, let's start with, we'll go in the order that you're in here. Let's start with Michaeline. And let me open up your mic. Hi, Michaeline.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
How are you today?
Okay.
Good. All right.
Did you see the document that I uploaded with some questions?
Did you upload it to the Q&A this morning?
No, yesterday.
Oh, I didn't see a document with it. Yeah, let me just go there right now. Usually the questions are in the... Let me go... Usually the questions
I had a whole bunch of them, so I just put them in a document rather than
okay, good. Yeah,
That's fine.
If you do that again, though, just put a note in the question part that says, "Hey, I uploaded a document with questions," because that's
okay.
Where I look, and I don't really look at the documents unless I get a notification that somebody's put something there, because it's usually for you guys to exchange. Okay, I'm going in now. Members access here. Give me a second. Okay. So it'll take a second to upload the document. And then there were a few other questions that some people had written in that we'll go over as well. And hi, Robin. Welcome. So it looks like so far we have Michaeline, Beatrice, and Robin on the line. Okay, oh, a whole bunch of questions. Questions on April 6th. Okay, there we go. Okay, so the first question from Michaeline is, if blood sugar drops 20 points after eating, and is this because of an insulin spike? So... Yeah, it could be. It depends on where you started. If you started at baseline, like you started at your fasting level, like in the 80s, 90s, and it drops, then that seems to me that there's been a spike and a very rapid drop down of the sugar. But if you happen to have been up there because you'd just, you know, gotten stressed out or had still had your blood sugar elevated from before, it may or may not be an insulin spike. So why don't you give me a little bit of a specifics?
Well, I think I'm doing this from memory right now because I don't have my chart in front of me, but I think it was from a reasonable glucose level before, like maybe 90 or something. And
right.
Then I think I had some sort of protein and carb together. And
mm-hmm.
I was really shocked when I saw it drop 20 points. It was like on the, you know, the one that you take right after eating.
So it was the right after. What happened 15 minutes after?
It started climbing a little bit. And then I think it peaked at, 120. I'll have to actually pull out my chart and see. But it had happened a couple times.
It happened a couple of times. Okay.
Yeah.
And it was always that one right after you ate it, rather than 15, 30,
45
minutes. You know, honestly, the one right after is the least accurate because that's when food is just getting into your system and sometimes things go a little loopy. Sometimes you get a really high reading right after, but then it settles down and never really goes high. And in those cases, I just, you know, kind of ignore that. That's like kind of a lag. The blood sugar goes up, the insulin comes in, and you might have just caught it right before it brings it back down. But when it drops right after, that could be definitely an insulin spike. And depending on what you ate, if you had carbs and protein, it's going to be more slowly absorbed than if you had just had the carb, right? So the carbs are going to get into the system quick, shoot it up, come back down, but the protein is more slowly absorbed and broken down. And so you can see actually prolonged levels of elevation, but usually not that high. So it's really hard to say. I would love to see your charts, though, because that would be really helpful, and that would be helpful for everybody else to see, you know, my thought process through that if we can figure out what's going on there.
Okay, I'll do that. That sort of brought up in my mind, okay, you know, the next thing is about the distinctions between hypoglycemia and reactive hypoglycemia, and then when you talked about in the video about how combinations of certain proteins and carbs can actually cause your insulin to go up even though your glucose
right.
doesn't.
Right. Right.
So
and that might be what happened to you because you have protein and carb and it caused a rapid influx of insulin and then spike. So it'd be curious to just watch if that's always after those meals and then after meals that you're more doing vegetables and carbs or vegetables and protein, if it's different, if it's a different response.
Well, could you clarify then, I guess, on the combination of protein and carbs and fat, what kind of combinations, like further down in the list of questions, I have things like... for instance, if you have kale chips with a nut batter, I can't particularly eat nuts, but that was a combination that I thought of that, you know, has carbs in it.
Yeah, but it doesn't have a lot. When I mean carbs, I mean dense carbs, like, say, bread with meat. The studies were done with potatoes and steak, for example.
Okay.
So that kind of a combination. Vegetables and protein is fine, and vegetables sure have carb, but it's a lower level because of all the fiber. It's more slowly absorbed, et cetera. So it's more, when I say carbs, I mean sugar and protein or sugar and fat. So, for example, the typical raw food desserts, which are nuts and dried fruit, those are suspect. Those would be the ones that's the combination of fat and carb. Rapidly absorbed carbs, meat and potatoes, rice and meat tacos or something like that, where you have a lot of carb. Like a typical Mexican meal where you might have refried beans and a taco shell and rice and then meat inside that. that would be the kind of food that would cause that spike.
Okay, so the carbs then would be something that would, if you had it alone, would generally raise your blood glucose.
Exactly.
And the fact that you're combining it with the protein kind of masks that because
exactly.
of the slower absorption. Okay.
Exactly.
That helps clarify a lot.
Right, but it still shoots the insulin up, and that's where we don't know how to measure that because we can't measure our insulin. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But that might be what's causing that. So the distinction you asked between hypoglycemia and reactive hypoglycemia, is, you know, you do a fasting blood sugar and the person's got like 68. And they're pretty steady. Their steady state is low. That's hypoglycemia.
Okay.
And reactive hypoglycemia is perfectly normal 80s, you know, ish, you know, sometimes even low 90s. And actually reactive hypoglycemia occurs more with people who are pre-diabetic or diabetic because So you might see a fasting blood sugar that's 80s, 90s, or even a little over 100. And then after the meal, like 3, 4, 5 hours after the meal, they're finding that they're down in the 80s, 70s, 60s. And it doesn't mean it goes into quote-unquote hypoglycemia that's a, you know, really functionally low that would cause the wooziness and the irritability and all that. But it's just really a fact of they start out like 90 or 100, and they're dropping down into the 70s after a meal. That would be considered reactive hypoglycemia.
Okay.
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 And people with the tendency towards insulin resistance prediabetes won't complain about the reactive hypoglycemia. They're not going to be symptomatic. Yet it's still a problem because it's a problem because we're seeing the high insulin spikes followed by the low sugar, and that's going to be causing all the dangers that high insulin does cause. So, but those people that have that combination really probably won't be complaining. It's the people who have that tend towards normal to low normal blood sugar, and then they get the insulin spikes, and they may never see high blood sugar readings because if they're starting in the 70s or 60s, they're high maybe at 98, but then it drops down and they start to feel, you know, kind of woozy again.
Right. So it all depends on when you're looking at it, right?
It depends on when you're looking at it. And that's why I'm a big fan of looking at it frequently, at least at the beginning, to try to really get a sense of what's going on for the person. Because if you just do what the medical practitioners tend to do, is like they look at fasting and then they look at 2 hours after. They're missing all the activity of what's really going on, what's really juicy about it. And at 2 hours, if they're saying if you're below 140, and newer statistics are saying above 120 is a problem, but above 140 is definitely considered a diabetic tendency if it's 2 hours after a meal and it's still at 140.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this leads into the next question then about the relationship between insulin and IGF-1.
Yeah, and I need to refresh my memory on some of that, but insulin will increase IGF-1, which is one of the reasons that you want to avoid insulin spikes because IGF-1 has a tendency to increase the risk of cancer.
Yeah. So could you say that does insulin drive IGF-1 or does IGF-1 sort of parallel? And, you know, when we talk about glucose and insulin tracks that, does IGF-1 track roughly insulin or is it triggered like by a certain level of insulin?
You know, that's a really good question, and that's where I'm a little fuzzy and need to refresh. I have several studies that I looked at, and I just really, I need to go back and see if it's the correlation or causative.
Okay.
Which was basically what you're asking, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's more, I think that when the insulin goes up, then the IGF-1 follows. And when if we can keep the insulin in a good range, then we don't get the spikes in IGF-1.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this relates to the milk protein thing that was in the video.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about how certain milk proteins raise insulin.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I wondered if you knew if that study was done on processed milk or raw milk. And then I know that casein is one of the things that is related to IGF-1 in milk, because milk itself has IGF-1, whether it's raw or processed.
Right.
And I wondered if that might be related in any way to, you know, these proteins, and if casein was part of that, or I didn't see it listed.
It's whey that they found to be the most insulinogenic, so it wasn't actually the casein this time. But I am aware that casein definitely can trigger IGF-1, but it seemed to be that when they separated and tested whey versus casein, whey was the one that had the most effect on insulin levels.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I know so much that whey is promoted as, you know, raising glutathione levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the question becomes, in a normal healthy individual, does an insulin spike from whey create a problem because it's not going too high, or is it a problem in general? And the other question becomes, you know, what's the reason? And nobody's really identified. There's been a lot of speculation about what the cause is, what the reason is for whey causing insulin spikes, but not really understanding. Like, some people will defend whey and say, well, it's because the insulin is going up so that you can absorb the amino acids in the whey. And others say, well, no, we don't really understand why it's going up, and it can be a problem, especially in somebody who has tendencies towards hyperglycemia and insulin resistance. It's just certainly a problem to have insulin spikes in a person that has insulin resistance. But is it a problem in a perfectly normal person who's eating a really good diet that's high in vegetables, low in refined foods, and so they get a little bit of an insulin spike after whey? Is that really a problem? But definitely in people who are insulin resistant, it is, because we're trying to retrain those insulin receptors and calm them down. And when they have this constant flood of insulin in the system, they don't get to do that. They just stay resistant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, for a diabetic who is, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I was going to say, for a diabetic who has exhausted their insulin spike. So say a type 2 diabetic who's been type 2 diabetic for a long time and now is becoming insulin resistant because they've exhausted their pancreas from all this hyperinsulinemia for many years. For those people, having something like whey, which helps to raise their insulin, could be a good thing. But for somebody who is type 1 diabetic, where milk protein has been found to increase the antibodies that attack the pancreas and the insulin and the GAD and all those other things, then that could be a problem. And certainly in somebody who's insulin resistant, you want to avoid insulin spikes.
Right, right. So when you talked about Gymnema. Yeah, and you were talking about it not being good for diabetics.
No, I said it is good for diabetics, but it's not good for people with insulin resistance. So, again, really good one for people like type 2s that have exhausted their pancreas, or type 1s, because it will raise the insulin levels.
Right. I said that backwards. So the doses that are recommended for those people are 4 to 5 gram doses. Is that right?
That sounds right. I'd have to look back. Again, I'm not really big on keeping lots of numbers in my head. I usually use my reference. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's just say large.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, and then you also talked about it not being good for insulin resistance, but I have read research that talks about it as an appetite suppressant, and I wondered if that's really in a smaller dose, like, say, 250 milligrams. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that's really just that it's clearing the blood sugar because there's more insulin there, or if it's actually somehow suppressing the appetite, if you knew anything about that.
I think there is a different mechanism going on that I'd have to go verify to be 100% certain. But I know that when somebody's insulin resistant, right, it's not that there's no insulin happening and there's no blood sugar going into the cells. It's just that it takes a much higher level of insulin to get it across. And so what the Gymnema might be doing, if it's stimulating more insulin, is it's passing that threshold. And then, whew, we're passing it and the sugar's getting into the system. But I believe that it's a different mechanism that it works on, and I'd have to look that one up. And I'm going to make some notes because you have some great questions, and I'll get back to y'all. Oops, that pen doesn't work. Appetite suppressant. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Do you want to just go down your questions, or do you want to ask them, and then I'll just look at your list to see if there's anything left?
Yeah, either way, whatever works.
Okay, go ahead. I like the interaction, so go ahead.
Let's see. So I was wondering about, you know, some of the protein drinks, powders rather, that are on the list have brown rice protein in them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're avoiding eating grains, which brown rice would be one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering what the difference is if we're enabled to have the brown rice protein powder, you know, in a smoothie, for instance.
Right.
What the impact is, the difference in the impact on our system relative to blood sugar.
Sure. Yeah, well, it is, in fact, the brown rice protein, not the brown rice carb. So the carb, the starch has been removed mostly. There's still traces of it. So there are a few people who are so sensitive that even the brown rice protein would create a problem, in which case they need to do the hemp or a new one, that new Warrior one that has the hemp and the, it's a couple of others, hemp and pea, but pea has starch in it as well. So if somebody's that sensitive to the very, very small amount, there's usually a gram or two or three or four even, but very small amount of carbs still left compared to 20 or 15 or 25, depending on the protein powder you get. And, you know, same thing with whey. You know, milk is a very high glycemic food in the sense that there's a lot of grams of sugar in milk because of the lactose, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but the whey protein, it's extracted out, and there may be little small traces of it. But it's kind of like butter, right? The butter has no protein per se, but it does have traces of casein and whey in it. But it's the fat component that's been extracted. So these are not whole foods. They're just extractions of, and you're basically getting mostly the protein. That's why it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And then relative to, you know how there's the potential for cross-reactivity in gluten sensitivity to some of the other grains, and brown rice is one of those?
Right.
If that's a situation, then it would the brown rice protein in one of those powders also be an issue, because the gluten proteins tend to be, you know, it's a protein.
Right.
I'm just wondering if that's the same protein that would be in the brown rice protein.
Yeah, well, so that's true. So it's really a matter of finding the one that works. So that's why we have people do the charting. And if you know somebody's gluten intolerant, you will work with them and say, look, maybe you want to stay away from the rice protein too and just do the hemp protein. But hemp also cross-reacts too in some people. So a lot of the cross-reactivity happens as a result of somebody going gluten-free and then just flooding their system with rice bread and rice crackers and rice this and rice that, right? So that's where a lot of that comes into play. And so if you want to verify that with someone, there's a company called Cyrex, C-Y-R-E-X, Cyrex Labs, and they have a gluten cross-reactivity test.
Right.
And that would be a good thing to do. Yeah. So what you're doing as a practitioner, if you're working one-on-one with somebody, they start to take and they go, you know, I just don't feel, I'm just not getting the results. I just don't feel so hot. Then you say, well, you know, let's switch out the protein powder. Let's switch out this. Let's get you off of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to give people the list of here's all the potential cross-reactive foods as well and say avoid these, people would quit left and right. Because it's really hard, because there's such a big list.
Yeah.
So we have to just kind of draw the line somewhere, and you know, the line in the sand is here, and then you watch. And I teach people, fill out the forms. If you're still not having results, ask questions. You know, I'm still this and that, and I'm still low energy, and what's going on? Well, let's look at the protein powder. Let's switch it. Let's take it out.
Yeah, I'm part of the reason I'm looking at this is because I'm noticing that the proteins, the alternate proteins that are used in a lot of the protein powders, potentially fall into this, you know, category that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like even the pea proteins, you know, can, the lectins could be an issue for someone.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. So when you're working with somebody, if you're working in a group, you have to kind of start with a norm, and then you have to be able to teach people how to narrow it down. If you're working with one-on-one, it's much easier because you're having them, and I recommend this, if you're working one-on-one with somebody, that you have them fill in charts. You can use, you know, some variation of what I've given you, whatever works for you, whatever you've been using, but keeping track and making the modifications as you go along. That's why fasting is such an amazing thing, right? You take people off of everything. The mistakes people make with fasting is going too long and then not reintroducing in a really clear way and not really paying attention to the signs and symptoms. But most people aren't willing to just not eat for 5 days.
Yeah.
So we have to kind of play with that. But you're right. There's just all kinds of, it's not straightforward. That's why we're here. If it was straightforward, we could give people a piece of paper and say, here, go do this, and they'd have a happy life from thereafter. They're on after and wouldn't need us.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I found is in the, if you're really testing your blood glucose, I found for myself that it makes me more conscious of what I'm eating because I'm really looking at that relationship between, I had XYZ, and then my blood sugar goes up or it goes down. Mm-hmm. And I really think that it helps engage with just the consciousness and awareness of what you're doing and what the direct impact is. Because you can have something and you say, it only has 4 grams of carbs in it. Doesn't
right.
sound like it's, you know, anything bad, you know, in terms of the typical advice. But then when you eat it, you go, oh, my God, my blood sugar went up to 120, you know.
Yeah, like what was going on there? Exactly. The other thing, that's a good point that you brought up because there was, I can't remember where the studies, one thing, I just wish I had the brain for going in the drama at this date and this time, this was the study, but I read the studies I, you know, incorporated in and then, you know, save the studies into my file. But there was a study where they just took 2 groups of people, they were eating equivalently, they monitored them, then they said, okay, this group's gonna track and this one's not. And just the act of tracking, they lost more weight. They actually lost weight, whereas the other people didn't. So you go figure. Just tracking, just being conscious, it probably put them in more of a state of consciousness and about what they were eating, and they were absorbing nutrients better. And I don't know why, but just the act of tracking really makes a difference. So, yeah.
Well, there's always this subliminal thing of, God, I don't want to stick my finger another time, so I'm not going to put this in.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm just going to eat those vegetables. I know they're not going to raise my blood sugar, so I don't have to poke and be happy, and that works as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I just get addicted to the checking. It's like, I wonder if that's going to raise it. Oh, well, that raised it up this much. I wonder if I combine it with that, what's going to be the result? And I will tell you, quite frankly, as I went through this and tested things on myself and got some really confusing results, it would cause me to go in and research and, you know, find things to explain it. And it really helped me. So, for example, I found that if I took broccoli stems, like my kids don't like the stems. They just like the tops, and I don't want to throw away the stems, so I save them in a big bag, and then once a week I juice them. And I juiced it with celery and ginger, and it came out to be a whole quart of juice. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, this is cool. And I just scarfed that thing down in probably a half an hour. My glucose before was 82. My glucose right after I finished was 125. And I thought,
wow,
that was vegetable juice. So I thought, you know what? It's one of those, sometimes the one right after, you know, if you might catch it right at that millisecond where the glucose goes up, it triggers the insulin, the insulin comes up, it comes down. I thought, it's a fluke. I took it again, like a minute later, and it was 127. And I thought, okay, so I waited 15 minutes, and I took it again, and it was 145.
Oh.
And it peaked at 147, and this was green vegetable juice.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, I drank it down really fast. Well, how many carbs are really in there? And I don't remember what the number was, but when you take that much broccoli and celery and ginger and you put it together, it probably did have a significant carb content. And the fact that I downed that much carb in that short a period of time stressed my system.
Mm-hmm.
So I've decided I either have to drink my juices in smaller amounts and slowly, or stick some chia seeds in it or drink them alongside a bowl of chia pudding or something to just slow it down. And I've done that where I've put the chia seeds in the juice and drank it and not had the spike.
Well, you know, that brings up a really good point because a lot of people, you know, I've been interacting with people, for instance, they say, oh, well, I'm eating a vegan diet, but, you know, like this wipes away all sins of eating.
Right. Well, no, it doesn't.
And that's a perfect example of how in that situation for your body, it didn't work properly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've been vegan, raw vegan, and not just raw vegan just for the sake of it, like super conscious, high green, no junk. For 25 years, imagine my dismay when I tested my pineapple and it was 167.
Yeah.
Not fun. And I realized really the importance of how, when I put this program together with all the components, how important those other components really are.
Mm-hmm.
And how quickly you can induce insulin resistance in a perfectly healthy person. So you take somebody like me and say I had everything going for me, plus I was sleeping and everything was working fine, and then I had 2 or 3 days of eating junk. I will have insulin resistance the next day. It's not going to last.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be one that's going to take me years to get rid of. But the studies have shown that 48 to 72 hours of eating a highly processed diet, you can induce insulin resistance in a healthy person. One night of bad sleep, and up to 3 nights of bad sleep makes it really worse, but 1 night of bad sleep can induce insulin resistance in a healthy person. So there's just all these pieces, so when you're working with people, that you just really need to dig into and ask them about. And the studies are showing that even 7-8 hours is not necessarily enough because everybody's a little bit different. And there was one guy's chart. I'll get all the references together and make a reference list for you guys that want to dig into it because some of these studies are fascinating. But one guy who had 118 or so was his fasting glucose, and they put him on a sleep regime. Didn't change his diet. They just put him on sleep, and his sugar started going down. And then when he went from, and that was 9 hours of sleep, 9.5 hours of sleep, when he skipped a few days and went to 7.5 hours of sleep or 8 hours of sleep, his numbers started going back up again.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
I experienced something a little bit similar. I had been getting between 8 to 10 hours of sleep, and my fasting blood glucose was 83, 84 pretty consistently. And then I had one evening where I had a real problem sleeping and, you know, the type where you just can't get back to sleep and you go, okay, I'm just going to get up and get a start mm-hmm. on the day. So I had like 4.5-5 hours of sleep, and my fasting glucose at that point was 90.
Yeah.
Now, it's
yeah.
not a huge jump, but it...
Not a huge jump, but it was. And if you had continued
yeah.
that, then it would jump up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you have a lot. Let me just run through your questions. And what does the change in taste from something that once tasted good to tasting sickly sweet mean? You're getting healthier. is there a connection to insulin sensitivity in this? It's weird because when I've got this, and it's not like it's not doing a carriage wind, so I'm. Wow, I'm having to go all the way to the side, so sorry for the delay. Insulin sensitivity, is this merely... No, there's some adaptation to taste, but I just think your body's saying, no, this is too much sugar, it's not good for you. Is dark chocolate really good for insulin resistance? I mentioned in one of the documents that that's controversial, that some studies say, yeah, it's great. Other studies say it's not. The caffeine, you know, a little bit of caffeine, but it is caffeine, can trigger some adrenal stress, which could trigger cortisol, which could trigger blood sugar. So overall, I think a little bit of dark chocolate is not going to hurt. But if you're in the habit of every day you're making big chocolate shakes and eating chocolates throughout the day, even if they are just stevia sweetened, could be an issue for insulin resistance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just mention it because, you know, it's almost a universal thing, especially with women, about, you know, I have to give up dark chocolate.
Yeah, so no, I don't think they have to give it up. I think that I really recommend that during, you do a period, right? You just do a 30-day, 3-week, whatever you can get done. You kind of negotiate a lot of times with people. Will you just do this for a week? Let's just do this for a week and see how you're doing after a week. And then you can get people to be more likely to do it. I negotiated for 3 days with somebody once. Can we just do this for 3 days? So you just have to work with people and see where they're at and just get them to buy in and then just extend it a little bit. And then with the chocolate, if you can get your blood sugar steady and then you have chocolate and it goes up, it's an issue. I've had one of the local co-ops has this chocolate. It's raw cacao, and it's basically raw cacao butter and xylitol. And I bought it and tested it. My blood sugar went up by 3 points. Okay? Mm. Wasn't causing me a problem. You know, maybe if I ate it every day and I was overstimulated by it, it could be. So if you got a point of negotiation and you can get them on this low glycemic diet for a month, give them a little bit of chocolate. You know, say you can have an ounce of dark chocolate, but watch that it doesn't have, that it's not the sugar sweetened. And there's a number of them now that you can find that are sweetened with xylitol or inulin. The one with inulin didn't raise my blood sugars at all either.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Janima, we talked. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you can skip down to the konjac root. We talked about the other stuff.
All right, good. Have you used the konjac? I love the konjac root powder. And, yes, it's extremely filling. I have one lady who just, you know, she is so sensitive and she just, her tongue is so sensitive. She loves the konjac noodles and she'll eat those with a nice sauce and vegetables and she's really full for a long time. So that's one thing. With the powder, the same thing. I mean, I find for me, I've experimented with putting some of it in like a cashew cheese or a macadamia nut cheese, one of the nut-based cheeses or seed-based cheeses, and use it as a filler and cut down. And it does gum it up. You have to be careful not to put too much because it'll turn it to like a brick. But, it definitely fills you up a lot more. So, yeah, I would definitely.
I noticed almost instantly when you put it in water, it starts gelling up.
Yep.
I mean, very quickly.
Very quickly, yeah. Yeah. That's why you can turn it into noodles. Have you had the noodles?
Yes. No, I haven't tried those. I thought I'd start with the powder and see how that, worked.
Yeah. I would say every single person who is a carb freak that loves pasta, and even one person who was a carb freak but she'd given it up for years, I said, well, try this, fell in love with it. Like, completely fell in love with it. And even my husband liked it, and he's tried the kelp noodles, the zucchini noodles, so whatever noodles I've tried to serve him, and he won't eat them, but he likes that.
Huh. Well, that's good.
And then the question about Irish moss, I've not tried it too much. I mean, tried it in place of Irish moss, say, in a cheesy-based thing, but I haven't tried it yet in, like, a cheesecake sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm thinking it's a much more convenient thing than Irish moss because, you know,
much.
You have to soak it and everything.
Much.
And also the benefits of the impact on the blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
The cognac root, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
my guess would be Irish moss would have that kind of same beneficial effect. But I don't know for sure. I don't know if there's been a lot of studies on Irish moss. But it has that gel-like consistency. So my guess is, I guess if you were to research insulin resistance and what's that stuff that's carrageenan.
Mm-hmm.
And see if what impact carrageenan has, because that's more of an extractive. I don't recommend using it because there's other issues. We can get into it another time. But the Irish moss does have carrageenan. And if carrageenan lowers blood sugars, then I'm going to make a note of that one, too, look that one up. So I'm going to move on to some of the other questions, if that's okay, if you have any others. And thanks, these are great questions, and I know that everybody else benefited from them. I know I did, so thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. I'm going to go close that document and those other documents that have been uploaded, so we'll go there after we get the live calls. Beatrice. Oops, your mic isn't. Okay, there you go. Beatrice, hi.
Hi, how are you, Dr. Rita Marie?
Wonderful, welcome. I know you just joined a couple of days ago, so welcome.
I'm happy to be in this class.
Great.
The main reason I wanted to sign up is because everybody keeps asking me what I did to lose weight. And I didn't want to give them too much information because it's your information, and I didn't know if I was doing the right thing or not. You never know with people. They want to know everything immediately in the corner where you saw them.
Yeah.
And that's almost impossible.
Oh, yes. But you know, you can do little trainings with people. You can take your meditation people that come to you for meditation classes and say, yeah, this is what I did. You could put it together a little class.
That's right.
So this is what I did.
That having a little bit more information than mm-hmm. what I had, because there's still a lot of things that I'm not sure I'm doing right or not.
Right.
And, for example, you talk about stress.
Mm-hmm.
I have realized that, at least for me, even good stress brings up my blood sugar. I was testing one day. I don't remember what I was eating, and I was testing every 15 minutes, and my daughter-in-law called and said, the boys want to go visit you, my grandchildren, who are 2.5 and 6.5.
Mm.
The next 15 minutes, the next time I tested, my blood sugar was up to 144. After they got here, it went down again to, you know, the very low hundreds. So I said, I never thought a good emotion would also raise blood sugar.
Yeah. Well, it does raise your adrenaline.
So,
and it shouldn't be a prolonged raise in cortisol, because cortisol usually follows when, I don't know, interesting. Oh, I'd love to look up that one.
it didn't stay high long, but it did go way up from like 150 to 144, which really and, you know, a little bit, I missed the next 15 minutes, but when I was able to finally test it after I said hello to the boys and everything, it was down. So I really do have to keep tabs on my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you ask me how many many vacations I do a day. I do a lot.
Good.
I do a lot because that seems to help me. Yesterday morning, I got up. The last few days, my blood sugars have been really crazy, and I think this body is recalibrating something. I don't know what, but something. So I wake up and my blood, it was a few days ago, it was 78, which is fine. Then it went down to 64. Then it went down to 85. Then it went up to 95, and these are the fasting blood sugars. Then yesterday it was 119. There was no reason for it.
Right.
So I did my 5-minute mini vacation, and it went down to 24. And I said, there's something wrong with my machine. So I checked it out, and it was fine. And I checked it again, and it was up to 95.
You said 24? I didn't even think it went that long.
I didn't think, that's why I said there's something wrong with my machine.
Well, there can be that. And every now and then you get a spurious result, but I've never gotten them that way. I've gotten, every now and then I'll go, what, 210? It was just 87 a minute ago, and then I do it again, and it's, you know, it's 88. So there's sometimes you get those spurious things, and it just may be, you know, your body calibrating back up and down, and you get these microsecond spikes, and it comes right back down again. I don't know what that might be.
I know myself, and I know that if I start worrying about something, it's going to be an all-day worry.
Exactly. So let go of the worry. Now, one thing I will point out to you, you just recently were taking off every medication that you were on, so your body is recalibrating itself.
Yes, because I keep losing and gaining the same 3 pounds over and over again. I don't think about it. I just eat the best I can. Ate normal, what is normal for me now, and this morning my blood sugar was down to 82 again. Now, that's normal for me.
Right.
So I guess it's my body is recalibrating.
Yeah. Yeah. And we look at patterns, right? We have to look at patterns. If you're looking at somebody's blood glucose, right, and they do their stuff and they show you and they have all these beautiful days and then they have this one day where it's crazy, well, first of all, you look at what's the food, like what's going on there. And if the food just looks the same, then you ask them about how was your sleep last night, and maybe they had a poor night's sleep. What's on your mind? And maybe there's this low-grade worry that sometimes it doesn't brim to the surface, but sometimes it's just there, like... For example, say, you know, you heard something on the news about financial whatever, and you didn't really consciously process it, but they're talking about, you know, the finance, all the things are going to collapse in the next 2 months, and you just go, but maybe there's part of your brain that's processing that and going, ooh, I wonder if, and I worry about, and so that could cause a temporary change in things. So it's the big picture. When there's one little blip in the screen, we just say it was a blip.
I just realized that now that you mentioned it, you had Laura, one pinky, Laura,
yes,
on the call, and I signed up for her, and she gave me a free hour with her.
Oh, nice.
The night before, I had that free hour with her. And let me tell you, it was intense and wonderful. She is so incredible.
Yeah.
She is so incredible. So there is my 119.
There you go. So you were bringing up some old things that were brimming to the surface that needed to be handled. So when you're working with people, when you're working with yourself, when you're working with people, you want to just see the picture. It's not like you're going to see somebody once and they're going to show you their stuff, you're going to give them something to do, and then you're not going to see them again. It's a matter of... you're just kind of monitoring, and the onions get peeled, the layers get peeled back, and we just keep digging and looking. And the way you learn is by somebody coming and asking you a question that you have no idea what the answer is. They present. And that's how I've grown. I've had people come to me with stuff like, oh, my God, how am I going to help them? Okay, well, I'm going to dig, I'm going to learn, I'm going to do. And then, oh, well, I've done that, next level. So it's our way of learning, and we only... learn, like muscles. Your muscle is not going to grow. Like, say you're trying to build your biceps, and you can take that 10-pound weight, and you get to 12, and then you get to 14, and then you get to 16, and you just keep lifting that 10-pound weight, your muscle's not going to grow anymore. You have to stress it.
Okay? You're right. When I teach meditation mostly to people who have cancer, and when... I remember a day when a mother walked in and she takes off her headscarf. She had been through chemo. She left her 4-year-old little boy outside watching TV. And she sat down and she just said, I am so tired. And I said, how can I help her, my God?
Yeah.
How can I help this woman who will probably be dead in a few months, who has a child who's sitting outside, who's here for hope and who says, I'm so tired. You really do have to pull out everything you have.
You do.
And that's how we grow.
Yes, you do. And you know what the biggest thing is? It's just really connecting in that moment, because it's your ego that's going, oh, my God, I don't know if I can help this person. And you're thinking, oh, what if I fail? And blah, 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 blah. All that self-talk that we get into. And when you just say, okay, my deepest desire right now is to help this person and to really listen and then to be willing to say, you know, here's what I can offer you right now. And let's talk again in a week, or come back to class again if you're doing a meditation class or whatever. And then really just putting their what they need in your heart and in your mind,
right,
and being connected with them. And the answers will come. And it may be that it's beyond you, but you have this great resource for them.
I ask for help, Dr. Rita Marie, the correct thing always comes out somehow. I may not understand it, but it always comes out.
So that's what we need to do. We just need to connect with that higher self, that part. For me, I love working with people with emotional eating problems. I've had emotional eating problems. I've had that. But I get to a point where it's beyond my scope, and that's why I brought Laura in to do that talk, because she knows it inside out. She's been living with it and working with people with it for many, many years. So, yeah, I can take it to this level, and then I want to bring in people who can take it to the next level. So, and that's what you always have to be aware of when you're working with somebody, is their highest good, not your ego.
That's right. That's right. Well, I lose myself when I'm in classes. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love And it's not about me, it's about the other people.
It's about them, right.
That's fair.
Exactly.
Dr. Rita Marie, I want to tell you something that I had not told you before. I seem to bring things up, like you say, peeling an onion. I studied with Anne Wigmore way back when snakes walked on 2 feet. And let me tell you how very different. At that time, not many people were raw. It was the beginning of the raw movement. And the difference between being raw then and being raw now and eating the way the menu plan you had given us is like a gourmet menu plan. And it makes things so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Carrying around your wheatgrass juice and your buckwheat sprouts and your sunflower sprouts, because that's basically what we were based our diet on.
Right.
And eating the same thing day after day after day, it really makes a difference.
It makes a difference. It's not to say that diet may get you a better result, but the diet that works the best and the exercise that works the best is not the one that's the best on paper.
No,
it's the one that people are going to go with. So that's where feeling the person out to see how far you can take them and taking them step by step. I had one woman who came in and she was like, she was willing to do one thing. I mean, this woman was laying on the couch with the dog wrapped around her. That was her life. And she was a computer programmer. She was smart, but she just couldn't. She was just so riddled with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. And I didn't label her. I didn't tell her that's what she had. But that's what she had. That's what we would say she had. And little by little, she just kept coming back week after week after week for 3 years and taking one piece, one piece, one piece, and having more energy and going, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? And she got to the point where she decided she was going to go all raw, and she got a dehydrator, and she just started really just, she'd lost 40, 50 pounds. I mean, amazing. And then, you know, she kind of spread her wings, and she was on her way. And I ran into her recently, and she's lifting weights, like huge amounts of weights. She's got her own consulting company doing computer work. And she's happy as a clam in a new relationship because she dumped the old one.
That's fantastic.
And we worked little by little. It was like, for me, like, oh, God, just do it. Just, you know, that's the thing we're thinking, just do the right things. But if you work with them little by little, they're going to get there. This program, the Before Be Gone program, is set out to have a finite period of time because people don't sign up for infinite programs, right? You sign up for this program, it's got this, and if I do these things, it's going to happen. And for people who do it and follow close to 100%, not necessarily 100% as you found out, they get great results. But when you dig in and you're working with people on smaller group level, and when I get on the Q&A calls, which is why they go so bloody long, is because I really want to help people with their struggles with each of the stuff. Like the main guidelines may not work in exactly the way they're laid out for each person, and that's where you customize, you fine-tune. That's why I teach people to customize and fine-tune. But with this program, really, all the things that are going on in this Before Be Gone program could be a one-year program to just get this piece in place. Okay, drop the gluten. Okay, good. Drop the gluten by 25% and substitute rice bread. Okay, now we're going to drop it by 50%. And instead of that rice bread, we're going to, and you can just little by little get the person going. Okay, but in a group setting, it is complicated because you have to set it up in a way that the majority of people are going to be successful and not going to get overwhelmed by too much.
Okay? Yes. I do have a question for you, though.
Sure.
This has to do with the time I found out at the Before Be Gone late at night that I was drinking chia seed when I shouldn't have after 6 o'clock.
Mm.
I drink lemonade, and I make it with stevia and with fresh lime or lemon, and I add, for a quart of water, I add 2 tablespoons of chia seeds before they're soaked.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm drinking it for several hours, let's say an hour and a half, does that raise my blood glucose during that time and the insulin or not?
You tell me. Does it?
I don't know. I have to test.
Well, check it. It probably doesn't. And if it doesn't, you're probably okay.
Okay, now, for the snacking, I don't consider snacking possible for me because if I start eating, I might as well sit down and eat a meal.
Right.
But when you tell people if you cannot take the 4 or 5 hours, you can have a small snack, does that raise their blood glucose? I guess it does. And then you have the insulin going there for about an hour or two.
Yeah, well, here's the deal. That's it. I tell them to do it, but follow the snack attack strategy. Have a little bit of chia seed gel drink like you're doing, the lemon juice. That shouldn't raise their glucose. So the snack attack strategy is laid out in things that don't raise most people's glucose. Okay? So, yeah. And it's, yeah, will it affect the insulin levels? Yeah. Everything puts the insulin levels up a little bit. But it's a matter of really helping people to make that transition. The people that have the reactive hypoglycemia and hypoglycemia, it's just really stressful for them to go longer, and then some of them get palpitations because it triggers a stress response. We don't want to go there because that's counter to what we're doing. They're getting their blood sugar elevated. If they're getting into palpitations and stress, their sugars are going up anyway, even if they didn't eat, so they might as well have eaten. So I'd rather them have a little bit of chia gel to hold them over or a celery sticks with celery sticks alone would be great, or celery sticks with a little nut butter or something to hold them over and raise their glucose a little bit rather than get into a stress response and raise their glucose as if they had a candy bar.
If they had a candy bar, I understand.
Yeah. So it's all just a matter of working with people where they're at and trying to condense it down. Anybody that can, let's go to 5 hours. And some days you may not eat enough at one meal and you're hungry. You either choose to be hungry as long as you're not getting into that really severe hunger, in which case it's a stress response, or you just have a little something, like chia gel and water would be great, or like you're doing in lemon would be great.
Okay.
But sometimes the snacking is more habit, and they need something tasty.
That's why I try not to do it, because I used to eat every 2 or 3 hours because I had surgery on my knees and I couldn't leave the house by myself, and, you know, you get bored after. I mean, I read like crazy, but you want to do something different, so I would get up and eat.
Yeah, and that's where if you do the water, I love the essential oils, and my essential oil collection just keeps expanding because it's just nice when you have that, like, ooh, just want that taste in your mouth because it's habit. That you have a really nice, maybe I'll put a little bit of, put cherry and vanilla extracts in my water yesterday. I had cherry vanilla water. It was yummy.
That was delicious. Are the essential oils the same thing? I know they're not, but would it have the same effect as the tinctures?
Well, tinctures are usually concentrated herbal things, right? It's concentrated, like you'd have a licorice tincture or a ashwagandha tincture or ginseng tincture, et cetera. And that's done very differently. That's a process where you're extracting the ingredients out, and it's several days long and usually uses alcohol. The essential oils are a distillation process where they distill out the essence, the flavor, a lot of the healing potential out of that. So that's just an oil-based, and one drop is like a huge dose, right? One drop in 16 ounces of water is good. Then the third one is extracts, which the ones we know most commonly are like vanilla extract or almond extract that you can buy. Frontier has them for flavorings. But most of those are, you know, they're cut with other oils like almond oil or whatever. They've got glycerin in them. They've got alcohol in them.
But it's not the same. Absolutely.
It's not the same. So, but the other extracts that I found is a place called Medicine Flower. And they extract through this process. The lady explained it to me, and whenever I listen to mechanical things like that, I go, oh, that's nice, and then I can't remember. So I don't remember exactly what it was. But there's this process, and it's pure. They use all organic stuff. They don't use solvents, nothing. And so they have vanilla and chocolate. So for somebody who really wants that chocolate, you can have them. Like, carob is really good for insulin resistance. We know that. It has pinitol in it, and that. It works similar to the active component in cinnamon, where it helps to just open up the channels. So you can make like a carob treat, a carob milk, carob whatever, and get some of this extract, this chocolate extract, and put a few drops of that, and then it tastes like chocolate. So if you go to medicineflower.com, you can check them out. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Marie.
See, wow. That's great. Thank you for all the great questions. I'm going to look to see if anybody that's on just the web, if anybody's there, has submitted any questions. Give me a second to open that window up. All right. I've got the other one open. Let's see, video conference. Looks like only Robin and Beatrice are on there, so let's see, and no messages. Okay, good. So I'm going to go to, if anybody has a question that just popped in, just put your hand up, a one. If you were not on the call the other day, we'd love to hear who you are, where you're from, you know, what your thing is. We didn't actually have Beatrice do that introduction, but we got through her speaking that she's a meditation teacher and she's been through Before Be Gone, had amazing results, and now wants to teach others. So, but if you've got, you know, raise your hand. Robin, yay. Hi, Robin.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can. You're very low, so if there's any way to adjust your mic, that would be helpful.
I got rid of the headset.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Now you're perfect.
I had put a message on the video conference, but there are two people listed as you there, and I tried to send it just to you, so it must have gone to whoever else is logged in as you.
Oh, so yeah, send it to the other one. Is it one that you wanted to do on the call?
Sure.
Because
yeah.
If it is, just send it to everybody, and then everybody gets it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll just say it.
Just say it. It's better.
Yeah. So, well, I'll literally read it. On this program, I'm experiencing higher fasting glucose than I've ever had, plus some constipation and hot flashes again, which I got rid of a couple years ago
when
I changed my diet. And, you know, I just, in other words, I'm struggling a little bit and kind of surprised because I'm used to fasting glucose in the 80s. And I, you know, it's been high 90s, 104, 102. Yesterday it was 84. Today it's 91. I had the first morning I get up, I make a protein shake with the Sun Warrior sprouted rice protein and felt like absolute crap for the rest of the day.
Okay.
And I had, it's not a huge surprise that a sweet potato raised my glucose, but I was shocked like crazy when I had a two-hour glucose reading of 155.
Okay.
That was with beet greens, and I thought I was testing the rye. I don't think I had a little bit of whole rye. I seem to do very well with rye. I mean, when I say a little bit, like a quarter of a cup of rye. But this, I'm sure it was the sweet potato. The other thing that has sent me to 148 was about a cup of pea soup, eaten with a big salad, by the way. So
you're clearly insulin. You've clearly got a blood sugar issue. You should be able to eat that stuff without it shooting your sugars up. The thing with the rice protein, I think you came on a little bit later, but Michaelina and I were chatting about that. Did you hear that?
I was on for the cross-reactivity thing.
Yeah, so you could... I would go gluten-free, first of all, to make this work.
Actually, Wendy said it could be caused by going gluten-free or being gluten-free. That caught my attention because I, at the advice of a naturopath last July, I went gluten-free. So there have been a couple of people. I was in Europe for a few weeks, and I made a decision I wasn't going to be gluten-free with the best croissants in the world. And I'll be honest, I've not noticed any difference for me in being gluten-free for all that time.
What was the longest period of time that you were 100% gluten-free? No rye, no croissants, no soy sauce, no nothing that you were really conscious?
5 months.
5 months. And nothing passed your lips?
Certainly not intentionally.
All right. And you didn't notice a difference in anything?
No.
Okay. You're a real good candidate for getting some testing done, the C-Rex lab stuff, because there could be most people that have a gluten problem that don't see a result would have some cross-reactivity. And the fact that you so strongly reacted to that protein shake, was that the first time you've ever had that protein shake, or had you had it before?
It's the first time I've had that one.
That one, okay. That says to me that one's not good for you.
Yeah, well, yeah. I got that message. Real. The other thing I wondered, though, is because I know I have problems with oxalic acid, acid and phytic acid, and I soak all of my grains to get rid of, you know, stuff like that. And when I'm and I the other problem that I have, I've had to do a lot of tailoring on this program.
Yeah.
Because I can't eat a lot of raw food.
Mm-hmm.
At least right now. And you know, raw greens will tear me up after a little while.
Right. Right. So cooking them is.
And I take a tablet of calcium citrate with it to sort of
mm-hmm.
phytic acid, and that helps me a lot. So I wondered if, you know, the fact that it's raw rice and hasn't been soaked, it might, yeah.
Well, it's been sprouted, though. It has been soaked.
Okay.
It has been soaked and sprouted.
Okay.
So it's not the same as raw. It's not like, there are some powders that have been out for years that they just take, like, quinoa, rice, and millet, and they grind them up and put them in there. Ew, that's bad for your digestion. No, this is soaked and sprouted.
Yeah.
So it's germinated. It's releasing the amino acids. But there still could be some, you know, it's not going to be completely broken down into amino acids, and there would be some protein in there. Do you have a problem with rice at all?
Certainly not if it's soaked the way I soak it.
Yeah, soaked and then cooked. Yeah. Yeah.
It works really well for me.
Yeah. So... here's what I would recommend. It sounds like you're not really following exactly the 30-day step. And obviously you have to modify certain things, cook more things, that's fine. But I mean in terms of staying off of the grains and the starches.
Well, actually, that one thing, this was in the preliminary week.
Okay.
Testing just whole grain rye. Other than that, I have been.
Okay, so you've been off of that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So sometimes what happens with people when they're going through this shift is that their body's adapting to the really severe drop in sugars and carbs, and you can go into ketosis, and that doesn't feel fun at all.
Mm-hmm.
So the combination, though, of maybe you've increased the number of oxalic acid foods than what you normally eat, that could be causing some problems. But you could be. Can you get some ketone strips? Get some ketone strips and just start monitoring your urine and seeing if that's going on. The morning glucose numbers sometimes do go up before they go down, especially when you're really severely restricting carbs.
Hmm. Okay, that's interesting.
So it's a temporary thing, and I don't really worry about that if it goes into the 90s. If it's consistently in the 100s, then no, but it does and it levels off. If you're going into that, you know, ketosis phase, and some people go into it before others, it could be uncomfortable for 3 or 4 weeks, which is why I try to get people to eat as much of the carby foods as they can with keeping their levels up, right? So don't take out all the fruit if you can tolerate it. But people who are really sensitive at the beginning and just don't tolerate it, and blueberries cause 147, then they're completely out of it, then it's more likely that you are going to reach into that ketosis phase and have those. It takes about 2 to 3 weeks. It's like your brain is getting used to burning ketones for fuel. Mm-hmm. And then one day you just wake up and you go, wow, I feel like a new person. But it can take 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, so basically just hang in there.
I would hang in there. And I would really watch with your, you know, watch with your digestion and keep adding the calcium citrate with the oxalic acid foods. Do you have a chart so you know which are the lower oxalic acid
yes.
veggies? Yeah, and the nuts and stuff. Yeah, so I would really, you know, watch with your oxalic acid, your oxalic acid, take the calcium citrate with it, which is a good thing to do, and then just watch and, you know, report back to us on the next call to see how it's going. Yeah, you see, this is what comes up. If some people sail through it. Beatrice sailed through it, you know. I just dropped 12 pounds. I just dropped 18 pounds. Feel better than I ever felt in my life. I'm going off my medication. And other people are going, Why does that happen to her? Why does it happen to me?
I mean, this is bizarre. I got us on this program because I know my husband has a gluten, glucose. Thank you.
Yeah.
Glucose issue, and but we've been on a whole foods diet, and we were vegan and or raw for a good bit of the past couple of years. And so I thought, this isn't much of a change. This is not going to be a big deal at all. And then I find out I've had higher spikes on a few days than he has. So,
honey, that's exactly what happened to me. I was like, look at your belly, guy. You need to be on this program. Look at me. I have a great body for my age. And I was the one that had the worst spikes. So go figure.
It's fascinating, but not always fun.
Not always fun. Look at the sugars. I mean, not the sugars, the sleep. Do your breathing.
Sleep is not an issue. I do think, I need to work on the stress piece. And I pulled out my little heart math. I've had a little heart math machine sitting around here for
a couple
of years that hasn't gotten much use, and I'm
using
that daily now. And I thank you for refocusing me on that, but... okay, I was going to just hang in there, but I'm glad to hear, that there's hope.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And keep checking in because, it's great if we have one within our small group of practitioners that's having, it's a tough case because it helps us to work through a tough case and really learn how to work with the tough case. So thanks for being the tough case.
I won't say my pleasure, but I'm glad.
I know. Well, great. You have a good one. I think we're good. I think there's just a couple of questions that I think it was Martha had put on the thing that I wanted to address because they were really important questions, and then we'll go, and I have a lunch date, so I need to get out of here. Let's see. No 3-hour call. I have so many windows open, I'm trying to find the right one. Okay. I lost my page. I'm going to open it up again. Okay. So, Martha wanted to know why it was such a problem if we have glucose spikes within that first hour right at the beginning, as long as it's back to normal at 2 hours. So kind of some of the studies. So I have several questions. I haven't heard all of the first recording yet, so I hope you didn't answer these there. So please just ignore if you have. Can you explain more fully why caffeine and alcohol are no-no? I've heard that alcohol isn't metabolized the same as other carbs and doesn't raise your insulin level. Alcohol can be treated just like sugar. It absolutely does raise your insulin levels, and I'd love to see where you've found or, what studies, and I can share some studies that I have that talks about it. But alcohol definitely gets treated like sugar, and it causes people to it suppresses their appetite because they feel like they've been fed. The main reason for the caffeine is its effect on your adrenals, and it will cause cortisol to stay longer. So you have cortisol elevation and you have caffeine, it'll just cause the cortisol to stay elevated longer. It could be a problem. This is why people who can't get up in the morning because their cortisol levels are too low will drink coffee to bring it up and keep it up. So that's the reason for that. But why the, I'd like to know why the avoidance of potential allergenic foods, dairy, eggs, corn, peanuts, etc., has to do with insulin resistance, and why. That has to do with the antibodies, autoantibodies that can be created as a result of food allergies, and especially dairy with regard to the pancreas. It can affect, there's antibodies against insulin, there's antibodies against the islet cells in the pancreas, there's antibodies against a couple of enzymes, the GAD and the fourth one, they're related to the insulin process. So when you avoid the allergenic foods, you reduce the autoantigenicity, but also allergenic foods cause inflammation. So when you have inflammation, that increases your insulin resistance as well. And then, how do we know that having glucose levels go a pie is harmful if they come down within a reasonable length of time. Within that first presentation, there's a video, I quoted several studies that talked about insulin glucose going above 120, starting to cause the damaging effects that we see that we attribute to diabetes complications, changes to the retina, changes to the peripheral nerves. And that happens, that starts to happen when the sugars go above 120. Even if it just goes above a little bit, it's happening, and it happens over time, over time, over time. That's a problem. They said, isn't that exactly what insulin is for, to bring down blood glucose levels? But if you recall, one of the charts I showed you in that first presentation was how the range of people, even on an insulin, at glucose tolerance test, where they're fed these enormous amounts of glucose, like 100 grams of pure glucose syrup. And the people at the low end, their sugars never went up. Even at the high end, they didn't go up all that high. So at the high end of normal. But when you get into problematic areas where there's insulin resistance or diabetes, it goes way up. So it really is normal to keep your blood sugar under 110, no matter what you do. And that's our goal, is eventually to be able to get to the point that even if we occasionally have an infraction, we're so healthy and stable that, you know, one bite of something with sugar in it is not going to send us up through the roof. But if we continue to do it, we'll get back into the same situation and recreate the insulin resistance. So that's the thing. We don't want it up at all. We really don't want that insulin up at high ranges at all. It should nicely parallel your glucose. Goes up with the glucose, brings the glucose right back down. It's when your insulin doesn't, either comes up higher and the cells are resistant, or doesn't come up enough, as in type 1 diabetes or the type 2 where they've worn out their pancreas. So that's the reason. I did hear you say that most testing is done within an hour or two after the food ingested, and that you discovered that it may go up really high in just 15 or 45 minutes. Well, the peak is usually at 45 minutes. And somewhere between the half an hour for most people. That's going to vary based on the specific meal. A meal that's purely carb might go up higher. A meal that has more fat in it might go up more slowly. But generally speaking, when you look at all, you average out all the studies, about 45 minutes seems to be when it peaks. When you do the traditional way of testing, which tests at 2 hours, you miss the peak. Even if you test at 1 hour, you may miss the peak, and you don't know how high you're going. And you can be going on for years and years of having these high peaks, but never develop true full-blown insulin resistance as diagnosed medically, which is sugar above 100, or diabetes, which is diagnosed as sugar, fasting sugar above 200. It may take a really long time, but you're getting these warning signs. And a few of the studies that I quoted you in there had talked about how when people have these shifts where they're getting these really high peaks, even though the 2 hour is great and the fasting is great, that those people within 10 years are going to be developing diabetes or full-blown insulin resistance. So good questions, Martha. Keep us on our toes. But go back and watch those and look at those and click the links. You should be able to click the links on either the slide presentation or copy and paste them into a browser and just start exploring. There's a lot of really good studies, and I've only quoted a few of them from there. So guys, it's been awesome. I don't see any other questions listed. Let's check on the hands. If I see any hands raised, I see Robin, I didn't put your hand down, but Zita, I will open your mic. Hi, Zita.
Yeah, hello, Dr. Rita Marie. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly.
I missed the call because of the time difference. I miscalculated, so I'm just hearing the last part of it, but I'm going to go listen to it later when it's on the website.
Wonderful, wonderful. You, where are you at, Zita?
I'm in Hawaii.
Oh, that's right, Hawaii. Yes, 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 I remember that. How nice. I'd love to be there. Yeah, because it's summer, right, and you don't do the time change thing over there. And so
right.
It's off by an hour. Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to shoot a notice about the, because I also backup recorded this on Instant Teleseminar. So if you want to listen to it right away, you can do that. And I'm just going to shoot a note on the dashboard there that I sent you to, and if you're not on that, I'll give you the email for that again. That way you can watch it right away, and then usually what I do is I go back and edit. These I won't edit, but the regular calls I edit because we've got video and audio and all that coordination. So recording, okay, let me get that link, and I'm just going to pop that, copy, and... Okay, so it's on, if you go to www.meetwithdrritamarie.com, you'll see just a plain blue screen. In the future on calls, we'll be showing slide presentations there. I can share my screen. I can show your case studies. I can even give control to you guys, and you guys can show me stuff. So it's going to be awesome. But for today, we're just using it so that people can hear on the web. And just click on that instantteleseminar.com event ID equals 27990111, and you can listen to the recording right away. So
it's 27990111.
111, 3 ones.
3 ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's posted. If you do go to the meetwithdrritamarie.com, you'll see it off to the side.
Okay, I will try that. And I have a question about I stopped drinking coffee, and I get these slows, sometimes even mid-morning or especially in the afternoon. And I do have a product that I used to take. It's called Better Than Coffee, and it really helps. It gives me a boost, and also I feel more clear in my head, and I can think better. But when I looked at the ingredients, it has maltodextrin and fructose in it. And I know that's not something that we should be taking right now.
What are the other ingredients in it?
It has vitamins A, C, E, thiamine, niacin, vitamin B6, folic acid, vitamin B12, biotin, chromium. And one of them that I think gives the clarity is choline. And I wanted to ask you what you think about choline.
Yeah, choline is it's phospholipid. It's really incredible for brain health. And you could probably reproduce the feelings of this by getting a good liquid vitamin B.
I have.
And then, add a little vitamin C powder to it. You can take some A and E if you want to. I don't think those are the ones that are doing it, though. But the Bs. And then choline, you can get some lecithin.
Is it from lecithin?
You can get, choline is from lecithin.
Ah, okay,
yeah.
But I just got lecithin from Premier Research Lab.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's a soy lecithin or, there are no GMOs, so you don't have to worry about it. So some of the lecithins are soy, but I worry about the companies because they don't say that they're organic soy in their GMO, but Premier Research is very reputable. Yeah, so if you were to combine, Premier Research has their liquid B.
I have that.
With some of the lecithin. And that should do it. I mean, if the boost you're getting is from the sugars, then that's not good, right? That's what we're here to fix. But if the boost you're getting is from the really great Bs and choline, which opens up your brain, then go ahead and just use the two premier products. You might also look at, they have one called CoQanol, CoQ10.
Okay.
And that can give you a real good energy boost, too, and help you get over the coffee fix.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Well, guys.
Enjoy your lunch.
I'm going to go to my lunch, and I am out of here. I'm going to open up your lines so everybody's open and we can all just say goodbye. So bye-bye, everyone. It's wonderful to be together, and we'll be together next Thursday. There were several people who submitted case studies already, their own stuff, and we'll be working on those on Thursday because that's our next rounds with Dr. Rita Marie Call. We'll do a little, kind of overview of the stress tools and some of the hormone and sleep tools that we'll be going over, and then we'll concentrate on those case histories. So if you haven't submitted a case, like your glucose chart and a little bit about you and maybe some things you're struggling with, then submit those on the there's document section on the website, and then we'll go over those. So thank you so much. Hi, Darlene. I saw you just joined us, and Darlene, you joined us earlier, and Beverly. So I didn't get to say hi to either of you, but welcome. But we're going to say bye bye.
I just signed in, so I'll have to go back and listen to it. I'm so bummed I missed it, but sounds like rushing off. I appreciate that.
No problem. Let me tell you one thing. If you go to meetwithdrritamarie.com, I'm going to leave that open, and look at the bottom. There's a link to the Instant Health Seminar, so if you want to listen to it right away, you can. There were some awesome questions from Michaeline and Beatrice, more observations, and really just really good stuff at the beginning of the
Dr.
call.
Dr. Rita Marie?
Yes.
I was wondering where that is.
Just type it in, www.meetwithdrritamarie.com. That's a conferencing service. I just have it forwarded. I have that URL forwarded there. And then if you scroll down at the bottom, it should on the side say a list of attendees, and then which say Robin, Dr. Rita Marie twice, I don't know why, and then Beatrice, and then right below that it says messages. And it says Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo to everyone, and then there's the link to that Instant Health Seminar.
Oh, you know what, Dr. Rita Marie? That's what I did first. I had trouble finding this, and it was really choppy. I couldn't hear you, and I finally disconnected from it and called in by phone.
Hmm.
It would be repeated. And-